Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Last week, we visited a guide dog school and got a good overview of what goes on there and the trade-offs between getting a dog and not getting a dog. This week, we'll learn a little bit more specifically about how the dogs are trained and how the recipients are trained.
We'll walk through the process with Maria Nuzzi, a guide dog mobility instructor at the Guide Dog Foundation and America's Vet Dogs, and Andrew Rubenstein, director of marketing for the foundation. But first for our tip of the week. This week's tip is the Guide Dog Foundation provides more than just guide dogs. Their website is a treasure trove of useful information in addition.
You could learn more about our programs, our training, our puppy raising, our volunteer programs by visiting guidedog.org. We have a wonderful amount of resources on our webpage, not just for guide dogs or service dogs, but we have care tips for people. We have travel tips for people. We have links to a lot of different resources for both sighted and non-sighted folks on care for their dogs or for training for O&M or any other skills that they might be interested in. We have information on our website about different eye conditions so they can learn more about that. So, you know, we like to think of our website as a hub of information. And then, you know, if people want to learn more about the foundation, they could follow us on our Facebook page or on our Instagram page.
And if you're at all considering a guide dog, be sure to listen to last week's episode and do some of that research. This is an important decision and will change your life dramatically.
And it's a very long-term commitment. Once you've bonded with a guide dog, you and that guide dog are a pair for 6, 8, 10 years until the dog needs to retire.
Support for Eyes on Success is made possible by
Hadley Institute for the Blind and Visually Impaired, offering the 2017 New Venture Business Competition to help blind entrepreneurs turn their ideas into actual startups. More information and submission criteria are at www.hadley.edu/NVC. If you listened to last week's episode, you'll remember Andrew from that, but we're going to ask him to reintroduce himself, and you'll also now meet Maria.
My name is Maria Nuzzi. I'm an instructor, a guide dog mobility instructor at the Guide Dog Foundation for the Blind. I've been here about 18 years, and I love my job, and I love helping people.
And how did you get involved in this business?
I got involved when my son was 10 years old. He wanted a puppy in the worst way, and we couldn't have one because we had an older dog that was 13. So I saw a little ad looking for volunteers to come into the kennel and free run the dogs that were housed in the kennel. So we signed up. We came here and we fell in love with the organization. We fell in love with the mission. We met all the dogs in the kennel, including the in-for-training dogs, the breeding dogs, the puppies that were in the puppy homes. And the dog that we had, our pet dog, passed away about a few months in, and we started raising puppies for the foundation. And from raising puppies, I actually got a job in the puppy department, and then I went on to the training department. So here I am today.
Andrew, maybe you can reintroduce yourself quickly for our listeners.
My name's Andrew Rubenstein. I'm the director of marketing for the Guide Dog Foundation and America's Vet Dogs.
And you're sighted.
I am sighted. Yes.
So how did you get involved working with the Guide Dog Foundation and the Vets Service Dogs?
I was originally working for a pretty big for-profit organization on Long Island and was interested in getting out of the corporate side of the world and getting into something a little more interesting and rewarding. It's pretty crazy. I get to go home and I actually can say, you know, we help change people's lives.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is what guide dogs are capable of doing and how they and their handlers learn how to do that.
So before you tell us what exactly you do to train people and how that process
I'm
works. Well, true. Okay, sorry.
So and people. It's so easier to train the dogs, though. But.
What is involved in getting trained to be a trainer?
It's an apprenticeship, a 3-year apprenticeship that you start out with about 3 other apprentices with you. And we go from theory, classroom work, to practical work, learning how to train the dogs. And then each step there's a test, and every day we're getting judged on what we can do practically. And then we have 3 tests. We have an apprentice test, a trainer test, an instructor test, and those are all written, along with need a certain amount of dogs that we have trained that have been successful and have gone on to placement. And then in addition to that, about 6 or 7 guide dog classes that we have to go and train students. So it takes about 3 years. Some are a little bit under, some are a little bit longer than that, but it's quite intense and it's very interesting and rewarding.
Andrew mentioned that there's a couple of 100 skills each dog needs to know. Can you list some of those? And maybe, obviously, they need to know how to stop and stuff
exactly.
like that. But some of the ones that people might not be aware of?
The obvious skills are the forward command, the halt command, the left and right turns. The obstacle work is a little bit different. People might not know if you're walking down the street and you have vision, you could walk around a garbage can or a lamppost. A blind person cannot. So the dog then takes a person around that. They actually stop at curbs so that people do not enter the street when there are cars coming. And one little thing that we get asked a lot is, can the dogs read traffic lights? Because they see us assessing traffic on the side of the road ready to cross an intersection. And no, they cannot read the traffic lights, but they are trained to some degree. If there is a car coming, that they will not step out into the street. We call that intelligent disobedience. So they're given a forward command and they do not move on it. They hold their ground. But it is the person that is leading the team to assess the traffic pattern and the flow and then give the dog the command when they feel it is safe to cross.
So, with my apologies, you may think this is a little bit irreverent, but that's how we dance. So Pete's blind mm-hmm. and I'm sighted, and Pete leads, and I keep us out of trouble.
Exactly. So you're his guide dog.
I've been called that before, more than once. He thinks it's funnier than I do.
So you must do a fair amount of work with the dogs before the person who receives the dog will get them, right?
Yes, we do. We start with 4 dogs per 1 trainer, which is a really nice ratio because we can give those dogs a lot of specialized attention. We do use clicker and positive reinforcement, and the dogs seem to pick that up very, very quickly, that they're stopping at a curb and they're getting all these great, wonderful treats for it. So then they want to repeat the behavior. So with that, we then build upon, we start in very, very quiet areas, actually right out back here in the back squares of our campus. We'll start training them to do their curb work and do their obstacle work. And then as they start to get the fundamental skills of guide work, then we move on to more involved environments where there are people on the streets, there's food on the floor, there's traffic, there could even be construction. So it's a progression. We start, it takes 12 weeks for us to train a dog from start to finish. In addition to that, as they get more skilled, we take them into the city, put them on subway platforms, buses, city streets. Anything that we feel that a blind person is going to encounter in their day, we will expose the dogs to that. I just wanted to add one more thing. Here at the Guide Dog Foundation, before a dog goes on class, we actually have blindfold walks that we do so that the instructors will put a blindfold on and we'll test the dog out to make sure that the dog knows all of its work without the handler, the instructor, cueing the dog, because when we don't have blindfolds on, we could be cueing. So that is a really good thing because we then see what the dog is capable of doing, and we're 100% sure that when this test is completed and the dog has passed, that it's going to be doing the guide work for the person at a very, very high level. So that's good too.
So I'm curious, as a trainer, you're pretty much in charge, but the dog is ultimately learning how to guide a person,
mm-hmm.
which isn't you.
Mm-mm.
When you bring a dog into a new environment like that and you're teaching the dog how to guide a person, are you the surrogate person, or you bring a different person and you're instructing the pair? How does that work?
Very good question. I am the person who brings my dog in, and I will actually, as the dog progresses in its training, act as if I am visually impaired, and I will trip over the dog and make them really know that this is what's going to happen to them when they start to work with a visually impaired consumer. So yes, I am the person that will go out with them. And we have several trainers here on staff that have strings of dogs. And we will each take our dogs into the different environments. At times, if we feel that the dog might need a little bit of a different, like, gender, taller person, shorter person, the trainers will then switch dogs and work each other's dogs in certain circumstances.
So I take it not all of the dogs can make it through this degree of training and be comfortable in some of these environments. What fraction of them do make it through, and how does that all work out?
That's a very good question. Right now we have a 60% success rate. As you state, not all dogs are up for the task of leading a blind person. We usually know that very, very early on when they go through our puppy program, which they're raised in homes with individuals and families for the first 14 to 18 months of their life. There's a big assessment that goes on there to see if they do have what it takes to go out and be somebody's eyes. And then when they come in here, the trainers will assess fairly quickly, putting them into these different environments, if they are capable of handling the, I don't want to say stress, but the responsibility of being somebody's eyes and guiding them around.
And what do you do with the dogs who don't pass the final assessment?
We have several different programs that we work with. One is our America's Vet Dogs program that we give service dogs to veterans. So if they're not qualified to enter the guide dog program or they're not doing well with that, they can go and be a service dog and do different tasks like retrieval, bracing, different things like that. We also have alcohol, tobacco, and firearm that our dogs are offered to, and several different organizations that also do service dogs that our dogs may be more suitable for them.
So these are like the canine police dogs and mm-hmm. the bomb sniffing dogs.
Correct.
And stuff like that.
Yes.
So they're already highly trained and
yes.
very good at following mm-hmm. orders, but maybe they can't quite handle mm-hmm. guiding a
the
blind person.
The responsibility. Mm-hmm. And there's also other service organizations that they train dogs for autistic children, so they could be offered to those types of organizations too. But we do a full assessment on them once they're released from our program, because they are raised from 8 weeks of age until they return to training here, anywhere between 14 to 18 months of age. So the dogs have a lot of socialization skills that were put on them. They're very comfortable to go in and out of different environments, to get into subways, buses, crowded malls, and things like that. So we like to assess them once we feel that they're not going to be making it as a guide dog and put them into some other type of career. And if none of that works out for them, the family that raised the dog is asked if they would like the dog back as a pet.
About 5 years ago, we did another episode of Eyes on Success, although at the time the show was still called Viewpoints, in episode 1209, where we talked with Pam Boyes, who at the time was raising her sixth guide dog puppy. And she was working through a different agency, which has different training procedures, so the puppy raising part was a lot shorter, but she talked extensively about all of these socialization skills that the dog had to learn while she was raising each successive one as a puppy. And oh, by the way, one of her puppies had failed in the intelligent disobedience test. And so she had that dog at home as well. And of course, the funniest thing was that the older dog was helping to train the puppy because the older one knew all the rules. And if the new puppy tried to put its paw on the furniture, the older dog would come along and reprimand the puppy as only an older dog could.
So you talked a lot about the training of the dog, but you also said that you train people. Can you talk about some of the considerations there?
Yes. There's a huge interview process that the student that would like the dog fills out paperwork, sends us videos. We need to know as much about the individual and where they're going to be using this dog, what type of environment, if they do work and what their work environment is like, their pace. So we take all that information and we look at it and then we start to match it up to what the dog excels at. For example, if we have a person who works in the city and has to take the subway every day, we will then look through the pool of dogs that we have and find one that is very, very comfortable working in the city, in the subway. Then once we get that, we'll match to the pace of the person because we want to make sure that it's not too fast, too slow for the person who's looking for that individual dog.
Then what happens?
Once we do match the dog with the student, then they're asked to come to our campus and they will stay with us for 14 days and they actually learn how to use the dog, how to take care of the dog, the feeding schedule, health-wise grooming, and be put into different situations.
What if somebody can't get to Long Island for the training?
Home placements are if an individual is not able to make it to the campus, and that could be for a medical reason or family reasons that they're caretakers and they can't leave their environment for 2 weeks. We do send trainers out to the people's homes with the dog, and we start training them for the specific tasks that they need to do in their home area. And that is another thing that we pride ourselves on, is that because of the small class structure size, we have 2 students per 1 instructor. They give a lot of individualized attention, and we can customize the areas that they need to work in while they're here on campus.
So when you talk about home placements, you're actually going into people's homes to specially train the dogs for some specific tasks?
Usually for guide work, we'll send the dog into the home area and then they will be taught exactly the routes that they need to do. So say they have to go to the supermarket, to the post office, to work. So the plus about it is that they're not coming here to the foundation first, learning all these different routes that we have here. We're actually going into their home area and the dogs are starting out learning the person's route instead of starting here. So both of them have their advantages and disadvantages. But like I said, for the home training, it's usually people that have medical conditions that keep them from being able to come here. The other thing too is that we have poodles that are guide dogs, and people that receive them are allergic to other dogs. So sometimes being in a building with 10 other dogs doesn't do well for their allergies, so they will need to be trained at home so that they can breathe at the end of the day.
We also do cross-training between our guide and our service dog teams. So, for example, we had somebody here who was a person who was blind who also needed a dog for balance purposes. She had a traumatic brain injury. So the guide team worked with the dog to teach the dog all the guide commands and all the guide work, and then the dog worked with our service dog team for the balance and the bracing side of things. And so when she goes home, she has a special harness for the dog, but she also has a special kind of handle that she can use when she's going up or down sidewalks or going up and down stairs. If she loses her balance, she can use this handle to kind of use the dog as a bracing device. So we also do cross training, which is a very unique offering that we're excited to supply folks in need.
So you talked about the fact that it's relatively new, that your training program now is 2 weeks. It used to be longer, I take it. What trade-offs have been made, and what are the differences in the programs?
The programs are very, very different. We used to have people come to the campus for 21 days, and we would take them to multiple environments through that time. And at times it could be confusing for the visually impaired because we're going to a different environment in the morning as opposed to the afternoon. So with the 2 weeks, we still cover the same tasks that need to be done, but we do in an environment that is more repetitious. So for example, one of their first routes will be a bike path, which was very similar to our old program. And they would just get out there and be able to walk without having to worry about traffic or curbs. And then we move them on to the traffic and to the curbs in a place, Huntington, right here on Long Island. And the team now with the new program will be able to repeat that route every day for 5 days. So they'll learn their foot positionings. They'll learn how to follow the dog. They'll learn how their dog reacts, what their pace is, what they'll do when there's things in the way. And they'll do it in an environment that becomes familiar to them over that period of time instead of switching up their environments for them. So that's a big difference from our program that lasted longer.
So even though the program is shorter these days, in some sense, you think it might be more effective?
I do. I know that the students that have been in the program in the past have come to the new program, and they like it a lot more because they're more active. They're not sitting around because we used to have one instructor to 4 students, so they would only get 1 walk in the morning. Now they could be out twice, maybe even 3 times in the morning, depending upon how fast they walk and get through it. The other thing we've added is we used to load up from the building right to our student van. Now we actually have them work a route out to the cars in the back, again, on those back squares I was talking about. So they're actually learning a route going out to get to the car. And we also have an obstacle course that we put in several years ago. And every day that obstacle course can change. So they just might get used to it. And then all of a sudden we change it up on them. But it's in a very controlled environment. And they're very comfortable back here. And they're able to follow their dog better. And they learn the skills and the fundamentals much quicker.
I heard that's how they used to punish Helen Keller, was to just rearrange the furniture in the house.
That's true.
There are blind people all over the country and, in fact, all over the world who might be interested in obtaining a guide dog. For somebody who, for whatever reason, doesn't want to come to Long Island and work with you folks, is there an umbrella organization through which they might be able to find a more local or better suited guide dog school for themselves?
We're accredited by the International Guide Dog Federation. I think there's maybe, 9 to 11 guide dog schools, I believe. And in the scope of things, we're probably a mid-sized type of organization. There's a few other organizations that do the same types of work that we do. A couple upstate New York. There's a couple out west in California, down south in Florida, and I want to say a couple in the Midwest. I'm not going to disparage any organizations, but it's important to have some type of accreditation to kind of justify the work you're doing. You know, you're putting people's lives in your hands. You want to make sure you're putting your life in the right hands with the right dog and the right training and everything that goes along with it. There are organizations out there that make promises that can't keep up to them, and we never promise anything to anybody. It's a lot of hard work on both sides, from our trainers to the handlers and to the dogs, you know, and if one person is not living up to that responsibility, then we make a change. But yeah, we're accredited by the International Guide Dog Federation and Assistance Dog International. The Guide Dog Foundation was the first organization to be accredited by both in the United States. So it's something we hang our hat on.
And in the show notes for this show, we will have links to both the International Guide Dog Federation and the Assistance Dog International organization that he referred to. And in addition, the National Federation of the Blind maintains a list of United States guide dog schools, and we will have a link to that list as well.
So, Andrew, there are blind people all around the country and undoubtedly all around the world who might be interested in a guide dog. How would you direct them to an organization through which they could get a guide dog of their own?
People could contact us and tell us what they're looking for. If they're not up for coming to Long Island, as Maria said, we could do a home placement with them. If they want to stay with somebody local, we'll drive them to the regional school in their area. People can also find schools, I believe, on the International Guide Dog Federation webpage. I don't have the URL for that right now, but they could look it up, and they should be able to find a list of schools that are accredited by their organization. But they can contact us, and we'll be more than happy to help them. And if they heard good things about another school, we'll give them the contact information for the other school, and we'll see what happens from there.
Now for this week's final item, how to get more information about the Guide Dog Foundation and America's Vet Dogs.
So if people are interested in obtaining a guide dog or finding a school that is appropriate for them, where would you send them?
Well, you could learn more about our programs, our training, our puppy raising, our volunteer programs by visiting guidedog.org.
What's the phone number for somebody who would prefer that?
If somebody wants to contact us over the phone, you can contact us at 631-930-9000.
Do you have a social media presence?
We have a presence on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. We have videos on YouTube. We do our best to communicate with our constituents on every platform that's really available. We dabble in some other platforms. You'll find us on LinkedIn and Google+ for that type of thing.
And as usual, if you're looking for any of that contact information or URLs that we gave in the show, go to the show notes associated with this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net. And in those show notes, we'll also have a link to the previous episode of Eyes on Success, where we talked with someone who raises the dog while they're still puppies and teaches them some of the socialization skills that they'll need later on.
That's it for show number 1702. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about the Blind Driver Challenge. We'll speak with Mark Riccobono, president of the National Federation of the Blind, about their Jernigan Institute and its mission and their efforts to create a car that a blind person can drive. And Mark will describe his experiences as a blind man doing exactly that. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.